You know, we started that conversation in 2012, and I remember in my report, I said, you sounded almost like a scientist because you had done so much research on this. You talked about making this a passion, bringing awareness about this. How's that journey been, Randy?
It has been a very long journey, and one that you would have to be passionate about to want to be on that journey. I like to tell people that I have an honorary degree in genetics, and the truth is I've learned so much more than I ever would want to know. The journey, though, has led us to a program that is really saving people's lives every single day, jscreen.org.
Let's talk about that a little bit.
JScreen was founded out of this notion that my wife Caroline and I had that we could really help families avoid the pitfalls of Jewish genetic diseases. The diseases that we're talking about are recessive disorders, which means both parents need to be carriers of the disease and then pass that disease along to the child. JScreen gives them the opportunity to be screened ahead of time to determine if they're carriers, and then if they're both carriers of the same disease, we can counsel them on how to have children of their own.
Two-part question real quick. And then number one, what is it about either, say, the communities where most, say, folks in Atlanta and the Jewish community are from that would mean that, oh, this is more or less something that occurs within the community? And number two, you mentioned your daughter has a mucolipidosis type 4. Just tell us a little bit about what that does, how that affects her.
Sure. Two very good questions. What we're talking about here really is population genetics. So we're talking about groups of people who are small in number, who geographically live in the same areas and typically tend to marry within that same small group. That's true for Jews of Eastern European descent, which we call Ashkenazi Jews. It's also true for other types of people, Cajuns, Irish, African Americans as well. And so these diseases, the mutations get passed around through this small group of individuals, and the mutations become more and more common in that group. So when we say Jewish genetic diseases, really what we're saying is we're talking about a group of 19 diseases that have a higher occurrence rate in the Jewish community. All of the diseases exist in the non-Jewish community.
So presumably somebody else could get them.
That's absolutely true. And I know many, many non-Jewish families who have a child with the same disease as my daughter. So yes, all of these diseases exist outside the Jewish community. The Jews of Eastern Europe migrated to the United States and other places, and that makes up, say, 85 or 90% of the Jews in the world. So most of the Jews that you know here in Atlanta fall into that category of folks that we would want to screen for diseases.
And the mucolipidosis type 4, what does, how has her life been affected by this?
Doctors say that children with mucolipidosis type 4, or ML4 for short, will never learn to walk. They'll never learn to talk. They'll have a maximum mental capacity of about 18 months. They'll go blind by the time they're about 12 years old, and they'll only live until early adulthood.
Because it attacks what part of the body?
It attacks the central nervous system. So Eden has neurological involvement. She has very, very low muscle tone throughout her core and other parts of her body. She has swallowing issues. She has stomach gastric issues as well. And so really it is almost pervasive throughout her body, but the biggest issue really are central nervous system and also her retinas that will degenerate to the point of blindness.
And Randy, with the education awareness that you all are ambassadors for, how important is it also to make sure that rabbis and the Jewish clergy are also involved in educating them as well? Because when we spoke just a few years ago, you talked about how for some rabbis, they were not given that information when they were counseling Jewish couples.
The reality is there is a real lack of information, not just in the rabbinic community, but also in the medical community. When we see our primary care physician once a year for 15 minutes, genetics really isn't the top on his list. And the same is true for rabbis when they're meeting with couples for premarital counseling. So what we decided to do was to make this a Jewish communal issue. Yes, we want to educate rabbis, and yes, we want to educate doctors as well. But if we can make it a Jewish communal issue so that young Jews in high school, college age are educated, young families, whether they have children or not, people just getting engaged or married are educated about it, soon we'll be able to make this a normal course of testing. And it's so simple for everyone to just log on to the website, jscreen.org, to be screened.
You mentioned that Caroline, I believe, had been screened for 7 diseases, and it was that eighth screen that she didn't have. Had she gotten that, it would have revealed that this was a possibility with the ML4.
That's right. So Caroline and I both went to our doctors before we were married, and it just so happens that both of our doctors are Jewish. My doctor screened me for two diseases, presumably those two because those were the two that he knew of. Caroline's doctor screened her for 8 diseases, and he screened for 8 because that was the box on the requisition form from the laboratory that he checked. Everyone agrees that that 9th disease would have been the one that they would have screened her for, mucolipidosis type 4.
Talk about the feedback and responses that you all have been getting since you've taken on this endeavor.
Oh, it's just been unbelievable. And I tell you, it's the stuff that really keeps us going every single day. Caroline and I were together a couple months ago at a function, and afterwards someone came up to me and he was absolutely in tears. And he said, "I want you to know that it's because of you and the work that you did that I have a healthy grandchild." I got an email from a friend just the other day who said, "I had a grandchild 12 days ago because my daughter got screened because of you." And those are the stories that we want. That's what we're hoping for, is to keep these children free of disease.
You started here locally just hoping to bring awareness, but this has sort of broadened out nationally. And if I remember correctly, you're an accountant, correct?
So I am.
Are you able to balance all this?
So in my free time, I am the president of a firm here in town, AGH LLC. And, the reality is I work with great people who have allowed me time to really focus on this passion. We did start this as a local program, but for me and Caroline, our vision was to take this nationally. And when we started, you could only be screened through blood for all 19 of these diseases. Our program, now that science has caught up with our vision, is saliva-based. So
really?
All you have to do is log on to the website, jscreen.org, put in your information. We'll send you a spit cup in the mail. You spit in the cup, put it back in the pre-addressed envelope, and then we'll call you in 3 or 4 weeks with your results from a genetics counselor. It's yeah. just that simple.
It sounds like a dumb question, maybe, but you're talking about rabbis and doctors who are smart people. Why weren't they aware, or why weren't they screening for as many diseases as apparently they needed to screen for?
I think doctors and rabbis as a whole are very smart people, but I think that their focus is very different based on the few minutes they may have with you. So you go to the doctor, like I did in December, and he says your cholesterol is high.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he's focused on, wants to make sure there's heart health and make sure you're not overweight and all these other things. He may not ask, are you Jewish? Are you getting married? Are you having kids? Because that's not the top of his agenda.
So the part of the thing then is to educate couples to say, look, we're thinking of having kids when they go to the doctor.
Absolutely. We want to reach the community in ways that they've never been reached before, because relying on doctors and rabbis has proven not to be the most effective way to make sure that these couples get the information that they need.
Randy, you and Caroline have had a little girl since we've spoken with last time.
That's right.
First of all, let me back up though. How's Eden?
Eden is doing great. She gets probably about 15 hours of physical therapy every single week. She is the hardest worker that I've ever met. She tries so hard. We're working right now on standing, hoping that one day she'll be able to walk. You'll notice when you asked me about the ML4 diagnosis, I said doctors say that. We don't say that, because we don't ever give up on Eden. And the things that she's able to do now are far beyond what we even thought she might be able to do before. So she works hard. We're working on balance issues. You know, it's a struggle for her to eat regular food because she doesn't chew like we do. She doesn't swallow like we do. Because of her low muscle tone, she has trouble going to the bathroom. I mean, just little simple daily life things are very, very hard.
She's 7, correct?
She just turned 7 in January, yeah.
And then your youngest is Shy.
So we have a little girl. Her name is Shy. She turned 3 on Valentine's Day. And what we want to make sure when we screen someone through jscreen.org is that they know what to do if it turns out that both members of the couple are carriers for the same disease. And there are multiple options that they could take.
Well, and this is where I guess then it depends on what the couples want to do. And this is where I guess I'm asked this question. Have you had people say, you know what, yes, we need to know this information, but this is really tough for some couples to make a decision if those screenings come back that there is something, you know, that one is a dominant carrier and there's a possibility that the child could be born with one of these diseases? That's a tough decision for couples to make. How important, obviously, is counseling, and do you all talk about that?
Rose, that is such a great point, and that's one of the major issues that separates our program from other programs out there that are doing genetic testing. Our program is one that includes medical oversight. So a doctor has to sign the requisition for the screening, and the results are delivered by a genetic counselor. So all of that information is communicated in a way that a couple is able to make the right decisions. And if they do have to make a decision, we want to tell them what options are available.
So let's back up then. So Shy, obviously, it was born and no issues, anything? No.
So the ways that couples could have children of their very own require a woman to go through an in vitro fertilization cycle, and she produces a great number of eggs. Those eggs are fertilized outside of the womb, and at 5 days after conception, they pull one cell from the eight-cell embryo. That cell is tested for the disease. If the embryos are healthy, they'll implant them into the woman. And that's how we actually have Shy. Shy is a child biologically of me and Caroline, and you can have healthy children of your very own, even if you both carry the same mutation.
Have you ever had anyone from within your Jewish community say, you know, I'm not sure I agree with that. I think that goes against maybe some religious or personal beliefs. Have you had those conversations?
That's an interesting question, and I have absolutely not once ever faced someone who had that view. The truth is, according to Jewish law, everything that we're doing is actually very important to do, that we have an obligation to save ourselves through medical intervention where we can, and Jewish law prevails.
You've been flying all over the country. I keep tabs on you. You've been flying all over giving speeches and taking this awareness to other parts of the United States. And how has that been for you? You like doing all that?
Travel is tough when you have three kids at home and a business as well. But I do love it because it gives me an opportunity to speak to folks who might not otherwise have this information. And really, that's where I love spending my time. I'm traveling this week to L.A. and to Phoenix, and I'll speak to anyone there who wants to listen.
We've got just a minute or two left here, but has the perhaps increased awareness of the screening and detection led to an increased awareness of the diseases themselves and perhaps advances in treatment for the kids that do have it?
For sure. The more information we put out there about these diseases, the more the disease community itself has connections that might lead to some cures. For ML4, for example, you can learn more about ML4, the disease, at ml4.org. We're looking now at gene therapy trials. We're looking at drugs. We have lots and lots of therapies potentially on the forefront at Harvard and at Einstein and at Baylor and at Michigan, in Iowa, in Israel, in Italy. Lots and lots of researchers studying ML4.
That was my next question. In terms of ML4, where were we in terms of the research and moving forward and finding a cure?
There are so many exciting things going on right now. 2 years ago, we hired a woman to be the executive director of the ML4 Foundation. Her name is Rebecca Oberman, and she has just been fantastic.